Dead Man's Gun, a Western Short. Chase Masterson had just turned 16. He was youngest of four boys. He's tall and filled out, muscles honed from working on the family farm. Chase has always had a hankering for something different, something, anything but walking behind that blasted mule and plow. The only deviation from his routine is when he goes to town to pick up supplies. He often wonders if he is really a Masterson. He's nothing like his brothers. They seem content with the everyday ritual that keeps the farm going. His pa is always accusing him of daydreaming, which, if the truth be known, he's guilty. It's all he can do sometimes to control himself when it gets close to the time to go to town. One day, as he makes the same monotonous trip back from town, he spies something in a little grove of trees.
"Looks like a body,"
he said as he pulled on the reins to stop the wagon. He jumped down and walked slowly to the body. It was a man. He knelt down and the man's hand grabbed his shirt, pulling him close. The man starts talking, but so soft, Chase leans even closer to hear.
"I'm dying, boy. Been shot in the back. Don't know who done it, but I'm a goner this time."
He tugs a little harder on Chase's shirt.
I bequeath all my belongings to you, boy. And one more thing. I give to you a warning. Whatever you do, don't wear my gun. It's cursed. I wore it to town one day, and that's how it started. Words were said, and the next thing I knew, a man was face down on the floor with a slug from my gun. That cursed gun had put a slug in his gut. I watched horrified as his blood pooled on the floor and he breathed his last breath. Oh, everybody said it was self-defense. But his two brothers didn't see it that way. 3 days later, there was two more men laying face down in the dusty street. Again, everybody said it was self-defense. And they had never seen nobody draw and shoot so fast. It was like a lightning strike flashing across the sky.
Chase interrupted him.
"What's it like to kill a man?"
"Well,"
he said slowly,
"it's not good. First, you're standing there facing him. You're scared. You want to run and hide. Hide anywhere. But you don't. Because you can't. You can't because you know if you make the slightest move, he's bound to draw. So you watch his eyes, praying to God Almighty he'll back down or say something, anything, to give you a chance to get out of it. Then you try to make yourself say something. But before you can, it's too late. He's not there anymore. He's on the floor. The cuspidor spilled and it's running all over him. People are screaming and they run in and want to buy you a drink and tell you he drew first. Then you break away and run outside somewhere. Anywhere, so no one will see you and vomit. It ain't nothing you want to get yourself into."
Chase listened as the man continued.
"Well, here I am dying with a bullet in my back. That man must have had another brother. Only thing I can figure. Sure wish I knew. I'd like to know the name of the man who killed me."
He coughed, blood bubbling from his lips, then continued talking.
"Whatever you do after I'm gone really ain't no concern of mine. But just the same, I wish you would heed my advice. Take my gun and my saddlebags and toss them in behind me when you bury me. I assume you're gonna bury me?"
He coughed again, this time for the last time. He inhaled deeply, then exhaled. He didn't inhale again. He had left this world, hopefully for a better place. Chase stood, looked around as if somebody was watching. Seeing no one, he turned back to the dead man.
"Well,"
he said,
"it's a good thing I bought a new shovel today."
He walked to the wagon, picked up the shovel, and walked off to the side of the road. The ground was soft and easy digging. It was just a short time until he had a deep enough hole to pass for a grave. He walked back to the dead man, looked down at him, and said,
"No sense burying him in those clothes. Looks to be about my size, too."
He started undressing the man. When he had him down to his long johns, he picked him up.
Don't weigh no more than a sack of grain.
He carried him to the grave, lay him down, and rolled him into the hole. He started shoveling dirt in until it was covered. He went back to the man's belongings, reaching down and picking up the six-shooter first. It was heavier than he had imagined, yet it wasn't so heavy that it felt uncomfortable. In fact, the longer he held it, the lighter it felt. It was as if the gun became an extension of his arm. It felt like it belonged there. He held it up, taking aim at the tree across the road. He lowered it and looked at the holster on the ground. He picked it up, slid the pistol in it, swung it around his waist, caught it, and fastened the buckle. He pushed it down, then he pulled it up, then down again. When it felt right to him, he pulled out the gun. When he closed his hands on the handle, something happened. Chase couldn't explain it, but a chill ran down his spine like a cool winter breeze blowing up his shirt tail. He had an urge to do something, yet he didn't know what. Then the old man's words came back to him.
Don't wear my gun. It's cursed.
Chase shrugged as his body shivered.
Ain't no such thing as a curse. That's made up stories to scare kids and such.
He began undressing and put on the dead man's clothes.
I knew they'd fit. Even the hat and boots fit good. Wished I had a looking glass. Like to see how I look. Well, I reckon I better get a move on and get the supplies out to the farm. Pa's gonna be upset 'cause I took so long. But after I show him these new duds and my new gun, maybe he'll be in a forgiving mood.
Chase tied the horse behind the wagon, climbed aboard, and headed toward the farm. His pa was waiting on the porch when Chase pulled into the yard and stopped in front of the barn.
Where you been?
His pa shouted as he stepped off the porch and headed to the barn where Chase was unloading sacks of grain.
I asked you a question, boy.
His pa demanded. The tone in his pa's voice seemed to irritate Chase.
Why is that?
Chase thought.
His voice ain't no different than any other time.
Chase continued to unload the sacks. His pa spoke again, a little louder.
Done you ignore me, boy? Turn around here and answer your pa.
It was like another voice bubbling up inside him, and he couldn't control it.
Don't you push me, old man.
The voice didn't sound like his voice. It sounded like the dead man's voice. When he turned toward his pa, pa's face turned white as ghost and he hurried away, back to the house. Chase stood for a moment, then spoke. It was the voice of the dead man.
What's going on?
He asked as that same chill he had felt before slid up his spine.
Could there be such a thing as a curse? If this gun is cursed, I want no part of it.
He reached for the buckle to remove the gun belt, but when his hand touched the metal, it froze. It wouldn't move. He pulled his hand back, then tried again. The same thing.
What am I gonna do?
He started sweating even though he could still feel that chill. He glanced towards the house and spotted his pa watching through the window. He suddenly had an urge to go to town. It was like he was losing control. He walked to the back of the wagon, untied the reins, pulled himself into the saddle. As soon as he settled in the saddle, the horse wheeled around and headed out of the yard on his way to town. The dead man's voice kept echoing in his head.
Don't wear my gun. It's cursed.
As he rode down Main Street, he could feel eyes, a lot of eyes, watching him. The horse stopped in front of the saloon. Chase felt as if invisible hands pulled him from the saddle. Once his boots hit the ground, those same invisible hands pulled him up the steps, onto the boardwalk, and through the swinging doors of the saloon. He could feel the eyes watching and could hear the murmuring.
What was it they were saying?
I thought he was dead. Henderson said he killed him.
Well, he sure don't look dead to me, unless he's a ghost.
He don't look like no ghost either.
Somebody better go get Henderson.
What are you gonna say to him? You know he's mighty cranky when things don't go to suit him.
Just tell him he needs to see something in the saloon.
Why don't you go tell him?
I got a bum leg, you know that.
Seems you only got a bum leg when it suits you.
A.W., stop your belly aching and go get Henderson.
Chase stopped at the bar. Or should I say, he was stopped at the bar. The usual? The bartender asked. Chase stood looking at the reflection in the mirror behind the bar. What he saw caused his breath to catch in his throat. There in the glass was the dead man's face. Chase's hand automatically reached for the whiskey the bartender had set in front of him. He had never had a drink of whiskey in his life, but he slugged the liquid down, slammed the glass on the bar, and his voice, or the dead man's voice, said,
"Give me another."
Sure thing,
the bartender said as he poured another shot. Chase glanced up at the mirror again as he picked up the drink. The doors swung open and a tall, dark man rushed through. He looked at Chase in the mirror and shouted,
"You're dead!"
As he shouted, he pulled his weapon and pulled the trigger. Chase felt the slug as it tore into his back. The pain was unbearable. He felt his body go limp as he slid to the floor. The last words he heard was,
"This time you're gonna stay dead."
The last sound he heard was the sound of a gun being fired. He thought he felt his body jerk as another bullet entered his back. Then, the swirling blackness closed in on him. And then, nothing. This concludes this presentation of Dead Man's Gun, a Western short by Rayford Champion. Outlaw's Choice is a subsidiary of Outlaw's Publishing, LLC, and as a part of Outlaw's Publishing, we hold to the high standards as Outlaw's does. Outlaw's Choice has plans to release more great short stories in the future. Outlaw's Choice is the place for authors with short stories to get published. Visit Outlaw's Publishing, LLC at www.outlawspublishing.com. That's www.outlawspublishing.com.
The Bounty Hunters, a Western short, written by Jose Benjamin, narrated by Lawrence D. Palmer. The Bounty, the Bunkhouse. 1. The Gentleman and the Wild Shot. The old shack was right in front of them. It was a dilapidated structure with creaky floors and a ceiling that leaked during the rains. There were extra buckets all over the old shack placed in key locations for when a rainstorm would strike. It was Jake Hellburn who made the old shack, cobbled it up with uneven wood, rusty nails, and just about anything he could get his hands on. That was the problem with Jake Hellburn. Hellburn was a lot of things, but he wasn't a good carpenter.
"Man, that shack looks like crap."
William Wildshot Buckley smiled as he eyed the ugly house from behind some bushes. It was an ugly piece of work, all right. Still, considering its remote location in the middle of nowhere, it didn't really need to look great.
Hellburn always fancied himself as a good architect and a builder of sorts. "The man is positively delusional."
Gentleman George Brady spoke with a dry wit and a stiff lip common to most Englishmen. Brady was never one to be overly emotional about anything. That was what made the duo of the Gentleman and the Wild Shot so intriguing. They were polar opposites, often as different as night and day.
"He did, didn't he? Well, he sure ain't. He's just good at one thing, killing defenseless people."
"Take it easy, Will. We don't really know the details of what went down with Hellburn and that lady down in Kansas. It's best that we just stick to the job at hand and do it. The sooner we finish this job, the sooner we get paid."
"If that's what you're thinking, then let's just go down there and shoot the place up. I reckon we can take on Hellburn if his shooting's as bad as his carpentry."
Brady rolled up his eyes toward the sun. This was what made partnering with Wildshot Buckley so difficult. The youth had earned his name in more ways than one.
"We will do no such thing. We don't know how many men are in that shack. Besides, the bounty was just for Hellburn, not anyone else. I'm not going to take any unnecessary chances if I don't have to. This isn't the way it goes like in those penny books you can get at the general store, where you can shoot several men and get away unscathed."
Buckley smiled at Brady. "Heck,
I ain't so sure about that. Wasn't that like how most of our jobs went? We just went in blasting away, and we come out on top, and several dollars richer. Truth be told, William, we were just lucky all this time, and I don't plan on pushing our luck. The two bounty hunters paused as they spotted one man leaving the barn towards what looked like a hole in the ground. That's him, ain't it? That's Hellburn, and he's going to relieve himself.
He's in the open. It's a perfect shot. I'll take it.
Brady took out a rifle and steadied his aim towards Hellburn. He took a deep breath and paused. He would have to time the shot just right and keep himself steady to make sure the shot was true. He was about to pull the trigger when it happened. Young Bill Buckley suddenly jumped out of the bush with his pistols and ran straight towards Jake Hellburn. The man was as stunned as Gentleman George.
What in the name of the Queen are you doing, Buckley?
Brady tried to call him back, but it was too late for that. Buckley charged at Hellburn, who still had his pants loose.
What in Sam hell? Hey, you going to shoot a defenseless woman, Hellburn? You think you're tough? Guess what? You're nothing.
Buckley ran towards him and began shooting repeatedly. Before Hellburn could even pull up his pants, he was peppered with bullets from Buckley's twin revolvers. He was knocked to the ground with several holes in his body. Jake Hellburn was dead before he even hit the ground.
Ain't so tough now, are you?
Buckley gloated over the dead body of Hellburn. That's when all hell broke loose. Several men bolted out of the shack and were soon upon him.
Buckley, you fool!
Brady had only seconds to react. He fired his rifle at the first man out the cabin's door. He was struck squarely on the chest. Another man was struck in the head, and his teeth went flying. The other men instinctively ducked or looked for cover. This was Buckley's chance.
Get back here, you idiot!
It didn't take much prodding to get Buckley to start running. Once the men were distracted by Brady's rifle fire, he started back to the bushes. The men started firing upon him, but they all missed. Their shots were wild, and they was too busy trying to find cover for themselves from Brady's gunfire.
He's getting away!
They fired repeatedly, but still missed. George managed to shoot one more man. There were four men firing upon them in all. The whole thing was soon out of control. Gun smoke choked the air, and the smell of gunpowder was soon everywhere. The sound of gunfire being exchanged was loud and clear. The gunfight was in full swing.
Look at what you've done. You've brought all his friends down upon us,
Brady said. Buckley smiled and cocked the chamber of his gun.
Don't matter. We can still take them all on.
He stuck his head out for a few moments and fired his pistol. It was a reckless shot, but he managed to tag someone. Another one of Hellburn's companions went down.
Lucky shot,
Brady said. Won't you ever compliment me for anything? Buckley kept his smile up despite all the lead flying everywhere.
I'll only compliment you if I see a genuine reason to.
Brady reloaded his rifle and cocked it. He was ready for a few more shots.
Is that so?
Fine. Don't compliment me. Just cover me.
Cover you? Have you really lost your senses?
Will didn't even reply to George's question. He just dashed right out of the bushes again, seemingly oblivious to his own safety. Brady could not believe what he was seeing. He quickly fired several shots from his rifle to distract the remaining three men. It was just enough of a distraction for Buckley to get up close to them. He fired at the closest man. The man was shot in the gut and fell to the ground. Another man pointed his gun at him, but Buckley was full of adrenaline now and was reacting even faster than he usually did. He nailed him before the man could get a shot. There was only one man left, and Buckley pointed his gun at him and pulled the trigger. There was no gunshot that erupted from the gun. There was only the soulless sound of a small click. The gun was empty. All of its bullets had been spent.
Oh, shit!
Before Will could even complete his cussing, the sound of gunfire pierced the air. There were two shots. The shots came in such rapid succession that it seemed like it was a single shot, but two were fired. The first shot came from Brady's rifle. The shot struck the man in the arm, but he still managed to get a shot off. Brady's shot messed up his aim, and he only managed to strike Buckley in the arm as well. The man dropped his pistol and fell to the ground, his arm bleeding profusely. Will approached the man with a malevolent smile on his face. The man tried to reach for his gun, but Will merely kicked it away. He was still smiling as he stared at the man and pointed his gun down at him.
Nice try.
He pulled the trigger. The gun was now loaded, and it fired perfectly. The man's head was blown off completely.
Two, a new life.
You just rode into that shack and killed all those men?
Mary Buckley shook her head in disbelief. It was a very compelling story. She had heard stories about her husband's exploits in the past. They often portrayed him as a killer, and it did frighten Mary when she first met Will.
Me and George did so. Yes, indeed. I'm not showing off or trying to recall past glories. Looking back, I was one crazy SOB. I was lucky I wasn't blown away right then and there.
Will said, "It seems like you were lucky in just about every gunfight you got yourself into."
William smiled at his wife and shook his head. He had gotten a little older. Age had taken its toll on his features, as they were now dotted with lines and creases. Despite that, William still resembled old Wildshot when he smiled.
"Yeah, I was lucky. It's just what George told me back then. Don't believe all that garbage you read in them penny novels. Surviving a gunfight is often just all about luck, more than anything else. There was a reason I was known as Wildshot. I was just reckless back then. I guess I thought I couldn't die, or something. And even if I did, heck, I guess I didn't really care."
"So what happened, Will? Why do you stop collecting bounties and such?"
William smiled at Mary.
"Oh, you know why I did. You just want me to say it out loud."
Now, it was Mary smiling at him.
"Why don't you go on and say it?"
"All right, I'll say it. I met you, and you changed me. You showed me a better way, instead of being a gunslinger. Happy?"
Mary smiled at her man. She took a great deal of pride in the fact that she had tamed the notorious William Wildshot Buckley. Not many people could say that they fell in love with a crazy gunslinger and made a better man of him. There were even times that Mary herself thought that she was crazy, and rightly so. Will earned his name in spades. Once, he would have killed a man over cards as easily as he breathes. Now, things were so much different. Time had given them many years of happy marriage together. There were no children in their union, but neither of them didn't really mind, as long as they had each other and Will had turned away from his old life. That was enough for Mary.
"Yeah, I'm happy. I'm very happy, Will," Mary said.
"Wait a minute. Do you hear that?"
"Hear what?"
"Hoofbeats, Mary. I hear hoofbeats in the distance."
Mary paused. Now she could hear them too.
"We don't get too many visitors out here," Mary said.
"I know. I better check it out."
William exited their little shack and stepped outside. He saw the outline of a man riding towards them. As the man got closer, William slowly recognized him. The years were actually a lot kinder to him than they were to William.
Buckley could not believe his eyes as the man rode closer. It was really him. Gentleman George Brady rode up towards William Buckley. He looked as if he had not aged a day.
We'll all be a roasted prairie dog.
George Brady, is that really you? Brady got off his horse and smiled at his old partner. They approached each other and embraced.
William, it's been too long.
You're telling me it's been years since we last met. But you don't look a day older. The two of them were clearly happy to see each other, but Mary kept her distance from George. She did not say anything to him and merely went back inside the shack.
3. Standoff.
William and George were up above a cliff when Tim Wallace and his gang rode down the narrow path. They had no idea that Brady and Buckley were lying in wait for them. They had ridden ahead of the Wallace gang and knew that they would ride down this specific path. They had waited patiently for several days to plan this ambush. It was rather meticulous, but they had done it. Now, riding below them was their just reward. There was a considerable reward for the Wallace gang up in Brewerton. They had robbed a bank and a train in daring succession, and people wanted them to pay for their crimes. A bounty had been rolled out for them, but Brady and Buckley were the only ones who managed to track them down this far.
I know we got the advantage of height and all, but how are we going to take those guys out?
They're easily 20 men, and we're just 2, Will said. George smiled at Will.
Is that a trace of doubt I sense in your voice? Is the legendary wild shot Buckley actually worried for once in his life?
Buckley growled at George. I ain't worried or anything.
I just can't see how the two of us are supposed to take down all 20 men.
Take it easy, Will. This high up, I doubt that even you can start anything reckless. We should be able to pick off Wallace and his boys.
You just love to get on my case, George, don't you?
Like I've said so many times before, I would not get on your case if it were not warranted. Now, let's make some money.
At the top of the valley, it was a perfect spot for George to snipe away. He had the perfect spot to pick his targets one by one. With 2 shots, he managed to take down 2 of Wallace's crew. Chaos followed. The rest of them spurred their horses through the narrow path to avoid George's gunfire.
You got 2 of them, but the others are getting away. We ain't going to be making money off just 2 corpses, and I'm a lousy shot this far away, Will protested.
Patience, Will. Patience. We already knew they would ride out here in advance. That was why I took the liberty of making some, shall we say, preparations.
George pulled down a lever that Will didn't notice earlier. It was connected to a long and lengthy wire that stretched all the way down to the narrow path below. The moment after George pulled the lever, there was a booming sound like thunder. There was a loud explosion that rocked the entire valley. Smoke and debris cascaded to the ground. And before long, one end of the path was covered with debris that fell from the explosion. Wallace and his men pulled their horses back desperately. The tall pile of rubble stood before them ominously.
They're trying to pin us down here. Quick, turn back. Turn back to the...
Before Wallace could finish, there was another explosion and several debris fell on the other side of the path. They were trapped with no way out.
Cover! Get to cover!
The men scrambled to cover. George managed to plant 2 more of them with his sniping.
Yee-haw! Ha ha ha! George, you stuffy old redneck! You did it! You didn't tell me you planted some dynamite all over the valley. Will was overjoyed and could not believe what had happened. Will gave him the briefest of smiles and fired at another man. The man went down. Wallace's men returned fire, but they could not get a fix on where George and Will were.
Calm down and lower your voice, lad. With all your commotion, they might get lucky and spot us. It's not over yet. Like you said, we're still vastly outnumbered. Can you get a good shot at them?
Will shook his head. You know I'm terrible at that thing. I always like to gun 'em down up close. George took a deep breath, then held it in. Another man popped his head out too soon. Brady made him pay with a shot between the eyes. The man collapsed amidst screams of panic below.
Still gotta say, that's some sweet shooting there. If you can't help me, then at least keep quiet. I'm trying to concentrate here.
Yes, sir. The gunfight dragged on much longer than Will and George had expected. George had managed to shoot 9 of Wallace's men, but it soon became a war of attrition. Eventually, the men wised up and rarely even popped their heads out of their cover. The waiting game began to drag on, and night was coming.
Do you see any of them moving?
George said.
I don't think so. I think you got 'em pinned. This isn't good. They're laying low, but the sun's about to set. Once darkness falls, some of them may try to climb up to our spot and kill us up close.
And we might not spot 'em on account of the dark.
Exactly.
That didn't sound so good. They were able to pin them down this long, but if one of them did manage to sneak up to their position, they could easily ambush them. And after all this time, there was a good chance that they already knew where George and Will were firing from. Will knew he had to do something fast.
Fine, cover me then.
Cover you? What are you talking about?
Will didn't answer George. He merely crouched and skulked away. Will descended to the path around George. Instead of climbing down directly towards the men, he took a longer route to try and sneak up behind them. The night had slowly descended, and he hoped that they would not spot him. Will pressed against the cliff face and crouched when he could. He heard William fire more shots in the distance. He had already made it down to the path, and no one had spotted him. Once he reached the ground, William crawled down to the ground on his belly. It was best that he crawl on the ground like a snake than if any of them spot him and take him down. Sweat poured off his forehead. Will could feel the rocky ground and the dirt on his shirt, but he pressed on. He crawled very carefully, making sure he was quiet instead of rushing towards Wallace and his gang. He knew that if he were spotted, it would be all over.
I really am crazy. I need a good woman to tame me,
Will whispered to himself. He crawled behind a large rock and saw one of the Wallace's gang. The man was sitting right in front of him, with only the rock to obscure his vision. Will saw that they had lit a small campfire up ahead, but the flames were small. They still didn't want to be spotted. The man was sitting all alone, and Will saw his chance. He pulled his bowie knife and gripped it with his right hand. Before the man could act, Will clasped his mouth firmly with one hand while slitting his throat with the other. The man shook violently in his arms for a few moments before expiring. Will quietly dropped the body. To his horror, the bowie knife had almost decapitated the man. His head hung limply on a slashed neck, and his eyes were open in an eternal expression of shock and horror.
Where are you, Missy? I reckon if I ever meet you, you'll be the light of my life,
Will whispered. Will gutted another man in a similar fashion before he came upon the gang.
Several of them were holed up in a corner of the valley, and one man was standing in front of Will at a considerable distance. There was another large rock in front of him, but the man was looking directly at his front. Will would not be able to sneak up on him.
Ain't no way I'm going to get past him so easily.
Things only got worse as some of the men's horses started to get agitated. They could sense that Will was there. They just didn't know exactly where he was.
What's going on there? The horses are getting antsy.
I'll check it out.
The man crouched and moved towards Will. He only stood up for a single moment, and it was one moment too long. A shot rang through the air, and the man was cut down. The man dropped dead in front of Will. It was George. It was quite an amazing shot, considering how dark it was.
Thank God that Englishman can sure shoot,
Will said.
They're picking us off here one by one. We got to make a move and get up that cliff. Hopefully the bastard won't spot us in this darkness.
Will had heard enough. It was exactly what George had feared. It was only a matter of time before Wallace and his gang worked up the nerve to climb up the cliff wall themselves. He knew that it was time to make a move. Will rolled to the dead man and took his hat. Before Wallace and his gang could spot him, he tossed the man's hat toward the group.
Look there! That's Jim's hat!
Before the man could pick it up, Will started firing at them. His first shot took out the closest man who reached for the hat. There were five more. The men pointed their guns at Will, and he acted instinctively. He fired straight at the campfire. The shot ignited the fire close up, sparking the fire momentarily. The flames shot up towards the men, stunning them temporarily.
The fire!
The men recoiled for a few moments. It was all the moments that Will needed. He fired two shots and took down two more men. There were still three men left standing. They managed to fire at Will. Will took down two of them, but the last man managed to shoot him in the shoulder. Will felt a sharp pain above his arm, and he lost all feeling in his hand. He dropped his gun and knelt down in pain, clutching his bleeding shoulder. The man approached Will. He was helpless. He looked up and saw Tim Wallace. He was staring down the barrel of Wallace's gun.
Wild shot, Buckley. I should have known only someone as crazy as you would be behind all this. Only someone like you who didn't give a hoot about his own life would try something as crazy as the stunt you tried to pull.
Buckley said nothing and merely clutched his shoulder tightly. The blood continued to flow from his shoulder. It was a deep wound. The bullet had struck him deeply. Buckley looked up at Wallace and smiled.
Ain't just me, Tim,
he said.
Not just you. What are you?
Before Wallace could answer, a single shot rang out. Buckley saw Wallace's head explode. Blood and some of his flesh splattered onto Buckley's face and shirt, mixing with his own blood. Wallace collapsed in front of him, minus most of his head.
I brought George along,
Buckley said, smiling. William Buckley smiled, but his bloodied body kept shaking as he knelt down on the ground. He could not stop shaking. A part of him couldn't believe that he was still alive.
Four, the proposal.
George and Will spent most of the day at the front of Will's shack. George looked around and saw Will's livestock. There were some chickens, hogs, and a cow.
I never fancied you to ever become a farmer, Will,
George said.
I guess I just settled down. Maybe I got tired of you always saving me back in the day.
George smiled at Will and patted his shoulder.
Yes,
I guess that business with Tim Wallace would have been enough to scare even the most reckless man, present company included.
I don't know, George. Maybe I wasn't as brave and reckless as I made myself out to be. I think my being wild shot was just an act. Maybe I was just trying to keep the growing fear in my heart at bay. Deep down, I think I really wanted to settle down and leave that kind of life behind me. I guess it all just came to a head when we took down the Wallace boys. George nodded silently as Will continued to speak. All throughout that encounter, I kept thinking I wanted a good woman's love to set me straight. I kept praying to God Almighty that He would keep me alive long enough to find that woman. I'm just glad He answered my prayers. Will motioned to his wife, Mary. She stood silently on the porch with them and glared at George. George, this is my wife, Mary. Mary, this is Gentleman George Brady, my old partner that I kept yapping about. George tipped his hat to Mary and smiled. Mary barely nodded to acknowledge his presence.
I have to get back to the kitchen, fix some stuff.
Of course.
Mary did not even turn around to answer George's reply.
It seems your wife doesn't particularly like me. You'll have to excuse her, George. She's, well...
George shook his head.
It's quite all right. I understand if she doesn't particularly like me. You did mention that you told her about our past exploits. A good and proper woman like that would not agree with the things that we've done.
Will shook his head and laughed. He tried to shift the conversation away from Mary to avoid anything getting even more awkward. His hogs snorted and pranced about in their pen with the mud.
I still can't believe you shot all those boys up in the valley. You had a pretty good eye back in the day. I still do, and I still keep that Winchester with me. I always bring it everywhere I go, with my umbrella, of course.
Will laughed again. Always the proper gentleman, eh, George? I guess you still dream of going back to jolly old England, eh?
Of course. In my heart, I have never truly left her shores.
Will crossed his arms and gave a stern look at George.
So tell me, George, why have you stopped by at my home after all these years? Something tells me this ain't a social visit, or nothing like that.
George shook his head.
Unfortunately, no, it's not. I came here to give you a fine proposal.
A fine proposal? What kind of fine proposal would that be like? George took out some wrinkled papers from his coat and handed them to Will. They consisted of a wanted poster and some pencil sketches.
Jack Bauer. Wanted in these parts for killing a man over a game of cards. Unfortunately for Jack, the man actually came from a prominent family up in Washington. They're willing to pay $2,000 for Jack, dead or alive.
William whistled when he heard the amount. His eyes almost popped out of their sockets when he saw the amount printed on the poster. $2,000 was a lot of money anywhere you went. It was clear that this poor sap had the misfortune of messing with some influential people.
That's a whole lot of money, George.
George's eyes lit up.
Exactly. With that money, I could finally get a ticket to a schooner out of here and back to England. You could use the money to give your wife a better life and...
Will cut him short.
I don't do that kind of thing anymore, George. I'm done with that.
George's heart sank at Will's words. He knew this would not be easy, but he still had to try. He had already rode this far to find his old partner. He couldn't just leave without giving it one last shot.
Listen, I know you don't want to go back to that kind of life, and I'm not asking you to. This is just one job. One job, and we're done. The man doesn't even have a reputation. It should be simple enough to take him down with little incident. Collect the money, and...
I told you, George. I ain't doing that stuff no more. I've got too much to live for here.
George could not help but laugh. He began to laugh and laugh loud. His quiet and reserved demeanor began to slowly break.
Live for? You must be kidding. Is this how you choose to live? Among pigs in the mud?
Now, listen here. You don't...
Come on, Will. What happened to the old wild shot William Buckley I used to know? The man who had waded through hell itself to find a bounty. How can you be content to sweep the mud from pigs now?
It took all of William's self-control not to smack George hard in the face for his remarks. He clenched his fist tightly on his side, but quickly loosened it when he remembered all the times George saved his life. For that alone, he would let his remarks pass. The man, unusually out of turn, was a clear sign of desperation. William remembered that for all of George's quiet and gentlemanly demeanor, he was terrible with money. It was probably no wonder that he could not manage to save an ounce of what they had earned through blood. Now, he was banking it all on this one job.
That man finally found heaven, George. Now, please, ride on out of my property before I lose my temper.
George shook his head and did not press the matter further. He smiled curtly and tipped his hat at William, then mounted his steed.
If you ever change your mind, I'll be riding south down to Kansas. You can still catch me if you hurry. All is not lost. Think about it, Will. That's a lot of money, and it can give you a real shot at a better life. It can give all of us that shot.
William silently shook his head and watched as gentleman George Brady rode out into the distance. He was sure that he had rode out of his life for good. Once George had ridden a considerable distance away, Mary stepped out of the house and stood beside Will.
I don't like that man, she said.
He's a good man, Mary. Just a little desperate, that's all.
Good men don't go on killing other men for money.
Don't judge him, Mary. He saved my life more times than I can count.
Mary shook her head and marched back to the house. William paid her no heed and stepped into the hog pen. Several of the hogs were more agitated than usual. They were quite noisy when he was talking with George, and it was all he could do to keep the conversation going. William waded through the mud. The stench was strong, but his nostrils had gotten used to it. He checked out the pigs and immediately noticed some of them were burning up. Some also had boils on their skin. William shook his head and frowned. It was a terrible discovery. They were already short on cash. They could not afford to lose any of the animals to disease. William marched the diseased pigs to another enclosure. They were docile enough, but he would have to bathe for a long time to get their stench out of his body. As he marched the pigs to their enclosure, his mind wandered to George's words earlier.
If you ever change your mind... I'll be riding south, down to Kansas. You can still catch me if you hurry. All is not lost. Think about it, Will. That's a lot of money, and it can give you a real shot at a better life. It can give all of us that shot. 5. The Hogs.
Will took out a long wooden box from a hidden compartment in the shack. He opened the lid and revealed the twin revolvers inside. They were the same revolvers he had used in all his past jobs with George. Will took them out and held them in front of him. They were pretty dusty, but they still looked fine. There were several shells underneath the pistols and another compartment in the box. Will lined them up and strapped them onto his belt.
He pushed out the chambers of each gun and spun them. Once he was satisfied that they were still spinning well, he loaded the bullets into them one by one.
You're going to take him on his offer, aren't you? You're going to do the job.
Will heard Mary's voice behind him, and his heart sank. He was going to tell her about it sooner or later. He just didn't want to tell her now. Slowly, William Buckley faced his wife. He didn't want to break her heart like this, but he knew that he had to do it. There was no point in beating around the bush any more. There they were, and it was best to tell her about it straight up. Mary, please, it's just one job. Then I'm done. I'm not going back to that life if that's what you think.
One job is one job too much. You know that, don't you?
Mary, please. I have to take this job. The hogs, they're sick. Mary did not know what to say. She felt almost offended that Will would take the job over their hogs.
Hogs? You're taking this job for a bunch of pigs? What kind of excuse is that? A man's life is much higher than pigs.
I know, Mary. You know what I mean. We're down to our last savings, and we can ill afford more setbacks. I hate to say it, but we need money now. This could be a good way of getting some. Mary was horrified by her husband's words. It was like a nightmare that had finally come true for her. Everything that she feared was packed in his words.
A good way of getting some? What are you saying? Killing a man is never a good way to make a living.
Her voice was breaking, and Mary was on the verge of breaking down. Mary, please. My mind's made up. I have to do this, and you can't stop me. Mary knew that tone of voice from Will. When he spoke that way, he meant what he said. She could tell he was firm, and there was no arguing with him. Will was already walking out the door with the two guns in hand. He turned his back to Mary and was soon on his horse before she could even compose herself.
Go ahead, then. Go and do what you must, if this is the only way that'll satisfy you.
Will turned to Mary on his horse. I'll be back in 2 weeks. This will all be over soon. He turned his horse around, and he was soon riding away from Mary. She watched as he slowly faded from the horizon, as George did earlier. Mary whispered a short prayer for her husband and prayed for his safe return.
Six. The Bunkhouse.
It was anything but an unpleasant ride to Kansas. Will rode through the rolling hills and golden prairies. The landscape of the young country that was the USA stretched out before him in all of its unspoiled panoramic beauty. The flowers were in full bloom. The streams flowed freely down the prairies, and the birds were singing in the air. Will passed by a huge herd of buffalo as they grazed and fed off the land. He rode a little more carefully as he passed the herd. Will was careful not to spook them, as he knew of their power to descend on the land like thunder. Their numbers were vast, and they could almost blot out the land in patches of black. It never even crossed Will's mind these magnificent animals would one day be pushed to the brink of extinction. Will had little time to take in the wonderful sights all around him, as he was too focused on catching up with George. This was the way to Kansas, and Will had a good knowledge of the land. Surely, George had not gotten too far for him to catch up. Still, it was best that he hurry along. George was a pretty hard rider when he set his mind to something, and this was probably one of those times. Will knew his friend well enough to know that he had a burning desire to go back home to England. The way he talked about this job, it was clear that he was very serious about getting back home. Will knew the lay of the land. How could he not, when this area, this land, held so many memories for him?
Too many things had transpired here for William Buckley. In many ways, he was tied to this land, and he knew it. The old abandoned bunkhouse in the middle of the woods was still where he knew it would be. It was already old when he discovered it, but it was positively ancient now. Most of the boards had been eaten away by time, insects, and the elements, but the basic frame of the bunkhouse still stood, despite half of its walls missing and a lot of cracks on the floorboards. It still stood and could still provide basic shelter. William knew it then, and he knew it now. William rode closer, and he came upon a familiar sight. Standing on the bunkhouse's front porch was George Brady. He caught sight of Will and smiled from ear to ear.
"I'm glad you changed your mind," George said. "It was an offer too good to resist. Still, I said it before, and I'll say it again now. This is the last time I'm ever doing this. I just need the money." "Suits me fine, old chap. I'm already chomping at the bit to get back to bloody old England. One way or another, this will be our last bounty. We've all got to move on."
The last bounty. There was a ring of finality to it, and William liked it. It was almost poetic that their last bounty would be at the bunkhouse where it all began.
Seven. The Beginning.
William couldn't believe his luck. On the run from the law, and with several bounty hunters looking for him, he had managed to stumble on the abandoned bunkhouse in the middle of nowhere. It was pretty old and dilapidated, but that didn't really matter. It was a great place to hide out until everything died down, and he could resume his life without the law on his tail.
"I can't believe my luck. This old shack in the middle of nowhere is just perfect."
William approached the bunkhouse's front door. The old floorboards creaked with each step he took. He was afraid they would crack underneath him, as there were already several cracks that dotted the porch. Still, William trudged on, and they held.
"Anybody home?"
he said in jest. The front door of the bunkhouse swung open, and William entered. The inside was a mess of rotten wood, knocked-down furniture, and cracked walls. Cobwebs, dust, and pieces of wood littered the floors. The smell of dust, old wood, and moisture hung in the air.
"Ain't too shabby. Just needs a little renovating, and it's good to go."
William took a few more steps forward. The floors creaked under his footsteps. As he passed the corner of one of the cracked walls, he felt the barrel of a long rifle pointed towards his head.
"That's as far as you go, good sir."
From the stuffy voice to addressing him, "good sir," William realized the man was British. William spoke without turning towards his new opponent. He saw him from the corner of his eye. The man looked thin and refined, like most Englishmen.
"Whoa, easy there, partner. I was just checking this old bunkhouse out. I didn't know you were here." "Wonder of wonders, good sir. I was just riding along the countryside when I chanced on this place as well. Quite the amazing coincidence that you would also ride by this way and enter the bunkhouse, isn't it?"
The barrel of the rifle felt cold against William's exposed head.
"Don't move a muscle, sir, or I will be forced to use Old Harry here on you."
Old Harry? The Englishman was pretty poetic as well as polite. It seemed as if he really liked his rifle a lot. William wasn't surprised. That happened a lot in these times. A man got so lonely riding alone, he often considered his gun as his only friend. That kind of man was often the most dangerous of all.
"Look, mister, I don't mean to cause you no harm. If it's all the same to you, I'll just get out of here and ride back from the way I came.
You can keep this old bunkhouse here for yourself, and that'll be the end of it.
The Englishman eyed William carefully. His gaze never wavered, and his hands did not tremble as he pointed the shotgun at him.
You look familiar,
he said. William turned his face to the Englishman. He was no one he knew.
I haven't seen you before in my life, mister,
Will said. The Englishman took a moment to pause and finally spoke.
You're William Buckley, Wildshot Buckley. There's a bounty out for you.
William didn't even think. He acted instantly and on instinct. His hands moved like lightning and swatted the shotgun away from his head. He managed to push it away, but the Englishman also managed to fire a shot. The shot missed William's head, but rang in his ears. It was like the sound of 1,000 gongs, and he thought his ears would shatter. He couldn't help but cover his ears and cower. Oh, son of a... The Englishman slapped William's face with the rifle, staggering William back. The Englishman saw his chance and aimed the rifle at William again. Will managed to regain his senses in time to kick his adversary right in the groin. The air was knocked out of the Englishman, and he bent over in pain. He doubled up and clutched his groin, dropping his gun as well.
Oh, oh, what the deuce? You cowboys just don't fight fair, do you?
Will followed up his attack with a devastating knee strike to the Englishman's exposed chin. He was sent tumbling backwards to the floor. The Englishman crashed to the floor and almost fell all the way underneath, but the floorboards held. Lying on the floor, he appeared completely vulnerable. Will pounced on him. But just as he was about to jump on the top of him, he felt something tie up his legs. It was the Englishman's feet and ankles. He tripped Will up, causing him to fall in front of him instead of on top of him. It was an elegant maneuver that could only be done by someone who had trained and practiced it. Hot dang! Where did you learn to fight like that?
I've studied exotic fighting arts from the East. A good gentleman like myself is well-traveled and picks up a lot in said travels.
Both men got up, but the Englishman was first to land a solid right cross to Will. Will was sent reeling, but was soon on the attack again. He charged straight at the Englishman, but was rewarded with an old chair across his body. The chair was smashed into bits as it hit Will. He staggered again, but was still standing.
Curse you! Won't anything put you down?
The Englishman grabbed another chair and smashed it against William. He finally fell to the ground, completely disoriented. Will looked up. He could see the Englishman, only there seemed to be several of him. His vision was shaky, and he was stunned. He did manage to see the barrel of the rifle pointed at him again.
You did it. You beat me. Now go ahead and do it already. Finish the job and collect the bounty on my head.
The Englishman smiled as he kept the shotgun pointed at Will.
I must confess that I am severely tempted to do just that, my friend. However, perhaps we can settle this in a more peaceful manner that would be mutually beneficial to us. Mutually beneficial? What are you talking about? The stories about you said that you were wild and reckless, a man that knew no fear and faced danger with no regard. I didn't believe them until today. You are a very brash and bold individual, William Buckley. Truly a wild shot. My name is George Brady. I'm a bounty hunter. How would you like to work alongside me? A man of your singular talents and reckless bravado could be very useful on the side of the law and profit. What do you say?
George extended his hand to Will. He knew he was taking a big risk. Even if Will accepted, it would be like trying to point a loose cannon in the right direction. There was no way to know for certain if they would get along. or if Will would even betray him along the way. The man's reckless nature made him completely unpredictable, and Brady knew it. He was definitely taking a chance, but how could he pass it up? Lying on the dusty and cracked wooden floor, William Buckley had few options left to him. He didn't like being beaten down like some wild dog. His pride was even more beaten up than his body was. The Englishman had a lot of guts and skill. He had to give him that much. A man like that was pretty hard to find in such times. Perhaps it would be a good idea to ride with a man like that. William took George's hand, and George pulled him up.
Okay, let's give it a shot, Gentleman George.
Brady smiled at Will. Gentleman George. He liked the sound of that. George had a good feeling that this would be the start of a long and great relationship.
Eight. Mutual respect.
Why am I not surprised to see you here? Will said, smiling.
It's only fitting that we meet here again for our last job, old chum.
George said. Fitting indeed. This is where we first met. I remember how you knocked me over with that chair. I got so darn dizzy I couldn't walk straight. George smiled at Will.
I knocked you with a chair twice. Quite fitting, considering that you kicked me in the groin. That was truly uncivilized. But what would I expect from a man they called Wild Shot?
Will laughed hard. A man's gotta do what a man's gotta do.
Perhaps that's not how they do it in jolly old England, but that's the way we do it here.
George nodded.
Indeed. Well, it was fun reminiscing about the old days, George. Now, when do we start riding after this Jack Bauer fella? Well, I suppose we can,
George seemed to struggle for what to say next. It was quite unlike him, and it puzzled Will.
What's wrong, George? Cat got your tongue?
Will looked at George strangely. He didn't notice it before, but he noticed it now. George wasn't packing his Winchester. That was strange and alarming. George packed his rifle everywhere he went. It wasn't like him not to carry it in his person.
Where's the Winchester, George?
Will asked.
Where's old Harry? You always carried old Harry along with your umbrella, Sally. Harry and Sally, right?
George didn't answer as sweat trickled down his forehead.
Harry and Sally. Ha! That's cute.
There was another voice from behind George. Will hadn't noticed the man hiding behind the walls of the bunkhouse before, but now he stepped out into the light. The man was carrying two pistols and was now standing in front of them. The man was bearded and had a wide belly. His stomach pressed against his shirt and made it a tight fit with his pants. William recognized the man in front of them. He recognized him from the wanted poster and drawings that George had shown him earlier.
Jack Bauer,
Will said.
Yeah, that's me. I heard your little conversation back there. You two local boys rode all the way down here to collect the bounty on me. Pretty funny how you met here in this same shack. Even funnier that I discovered it, too. I guess fate has a strange sense of humor. Well, you're not going to collect any bounty on me. You ain't even walking out of here alive, Bauer said.
Why didn't you just shoot us in the back when you had the chance, Bauer?
Will asked. Didn't you read the posters? I killed a man over cards. I'm a gambler. I like to play. Didn't think it would be sporting of me if I just shot you both in the back. Right? I reckon it would be better if I shot you both face to face and dead to rights. You deserve that much, I reckon.
Thanks, Jack. You were right. I respect a man that thinks like you.
Will tried to keep calm and keep Jack talking. This close, with two guns, the man couldn't possibly miss. They were clearly at a disadvantage, and playing to Bauer's ego was the only chance that they had.
Thank you very much, Buckley. I'm glad you appreciate the gesture.
Of course. It's all about mutual respect, right? Why don't you tell us how you killed that man over cards? I'm just curious how all this business got to this point.
Bauer smiled at Will.
I reckon I might as well tell you all about it.
9. No cheating.
There ain't really much to say, but I'll say it anyway, on account of mutual respect and all.
Of course, Jack. Please go on.
Bauer began to speak. Will and George eyed him carefully for any mistake he could make, any possible slip-up to take advantage of.
I ain't never cheated no one in my life. Never. I played so many card games that I've lost count. You know that?
Yeah? Is that so?
It is so. I've never cheated in a single one of them. Even when I killed Terry Hendershaw, I never cheated.
So what happened, Jack?
I beat him in poker, fair and square. The spoiled brat took it like a baby and whined and cried about it. Still, it wouldn't have mattered, but ain't no baby that packs a colt in his pocket. Hendershaw drew first, and I fired last. He was blown away at the card table, right then and there. Been a wanted man ever since.
But what about the bounty? Why the high price? It's rather high for something like that.
George said.
You reckon Hendershaw was worth nothing more than a rotten squirrel? You reckoned right, Englishman. Just about everyone gets it in a game of cards. It shouldn't have mattered. And the bounty was never supposed to be that high. I later learned that the weasel married a rich and proper lady from the big city. When she learned her worthless husband died in a game of cards, she posted the huge bounty. Before I knew it, I had every single bounty hunter crawling over my back, present company included, of course.
That explains a lot. No wonder the bounty was set so high,
Will said.
You bet. It should never have been so high if it were just another local boy. And the worst part, it's true. I never cheated the fool. I played my cards right and honest. He was the first one to draw on me. What was I supposed to do, just sit there and get shot?
Will shook his head.
No, you did right, Jack.
A man deserves the right to defend himself. Exactly. Well, it's been fun chewing the fat around with you two fellas, but I just can't let you guys just kill me over a worthless dog like Hendershaw. You said it yourself. I gotta defend myself.
I understand completely. The man's within his rights, ain't he, George?
George turned to Will with a look of terror in his eyes. He didn't know what Will was planning, if he was even planning anything anymore. He had always had a streak of madness in him, and now, perhaps, he had truly gone insane.
Will, he's pretty funny, isn't it, Jack?
What's so funny?
Bauer's voice rose, and his hands trembled. He was ready to pull the triggers any time now.
It's funny what time can do to something. I mean, when I first discovered this old bunkhouse, it was just, well, old. Now, it's just plain barely standing. You would think that the wind could just blow it over with a small breeze. I mean, that's real funny, isn't it?
I don't know what you're talking about, but your time is up.
Bauer was about to pull the triggers and fire the guns when Will stomped on the floorboards hard. His eyes had noticed the uneven cracks and wedges along the floorboards. One hard stomp was all it took to crack and break the wood under their feet. Will stomped on the floorboard as hard as he could. It was already uneven and exposed when they were standing on it. His powerful boot stomp sent a large piece of the floorboard along with some splinters flying towards Bauer's face. The pieces of wood scratched his face, and he was disoriented for only a moment. It was the only moment they had.
What the blazes?
Will and George charged at Bauer and grabbed his arms. They knocked him through the front wall, smashing it in the process. They came crashing into the bunkhouse. A life-and-death struggle soon ensued between the three men. George and Will slammed Bauer's hands onto the wooden floors until he dropped his revolvers. They were about to punch him repeatedly when they were suddenly pushed back by the force of Bauer's knees alone. Bauer was a sizable man with considerable strength. The two bounty hunters were flung across the room and into some old furniture, smashing some tables along the way. The man was unusually big and strong, and now he was coming for George and Will as they lay slumped on one side of the wall. Bauer charged at them like a mad bull in a china shop. Before the two friends could stand up and move out of the way, he was smashing into them and through the brittle wall. The wall collapsed as if it were made of matchsticks instead of wood, and the three men tumbled back outside the bunkhouse. It was Bauer who first got up. He saw George sprawled on the ground and was about to strike him with both his fists. The impact and Bauer's sheer strength would have probably cracked Brady's skull open. He never had the chance to ram his fist down Brady's skull. Before Bauer could hammer his fist down, he felt two arms around his neck. It was Buckley, and he was trying to choke the giant of a man out. Bauer spun and shook violently, like an enraged grizzly. The strain on Will's arms and body was tremendous. Bauer thrashed around violently, and he was tossed and turned like a rag doll. Still, somehow, Will hung on for dear life.
What's going on?
George shook off the cobwebs and saw the intense struggle play out before him. Bauer was thrashing, and Will was still holding on. It was worse than riding a wild bronco bull. George had no idea where Will found the strength to hang on. This went on for several tense minutes until finally George noticed Bauer's legs begin to buckle and shake. His legs became wobbly and he began to lose his balance. He could see Bauer's eyes roll over and his mouth foam. Will still held on until finally Bauer was on his knees. Sensing his chance, Will tightened his grip on Bauer's neck and even wrapped his legs around him until Bauer finally collapsed. Will continued to squeeze with his entire body until Bauer felt the air drain from his lungs. Finally, Bauer's body went limp and Will let go. He rolled over and stood beside George. They stood over Bauer's limp body. Bauer wasn't moving.
Is he dead?
George asked.
No, I just choked him until he passed out. That ought to keep him out long enough to incapacitate him. There are some ropes lying around in the bunkhouse. We can tie him up and send him back to the sheriff's. I read the poster. The bounty'll go down, but you'll still be able to get your ticket back home, and I should be able to cure my hogs,
Will said.
Hogs?
Never mind. George shook his head.
Why didn't you snap his neck or something then? We could have gotten a higher reward.
Will shook his head.
I told you, George, I'm done with this life. I won't kill a man if I don't have to. I just saw a chance to spare his life, and I did it. Fair enough, old chap. I guess that should be enough to keep your wife happy,
George said.
Definitely.
George dusted himself off, and the two of them began to walk briskly to the bunkhouse where the ropes would be.
So tell me one thing, William.
What's that, George?
Where did you learn to fight like that?
William smiled at George. Pancras and ancient wrestling. The ancient Greeks considered it a sport back in the day. You should try learning about it. I'm surprised you don't know about it. Seems the gentleman still has a lot to learn in his travels. George smiled and patted William's back. It was amazing how William Buckley always found ways to surprise him. The old ropes were right where Will thought they would be. Once they returned with the ropes, it was a simple enough matter to tie up Bauer. The large man could barely struggle or complain. The effects of Will's hold was still there, and he could barely move. He was still barely conscious, even on the ride back to town. William and George rode back with their precious live bounty, Jack Bauer. Jack was all tied up and mumbled and ranted all the way back to town. I never cheated at a single game. Never!
This has been The Bounty Hunters, a Western short, written by Jose Benjamin, narrated by Lawrence D. Palmer. Copyright April 2017 by Outlaw's Choice. Production copyright 2017 by Outlaw's Choice.